The Serious Side of the J. Ryle Show is coming up next right here on the TJRS Radio Network online radio at its best.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network. Network.
WWE Superstar Big Show here to tell you, if you've been drinking, get a ride. Take a cab. Find another safe way to get home. Cops all across the country are cracking down on drunk driving. They will see you before you see them. Drive sober or get pulled over.
Online radio at its best. Online radio at its best.
If you're resident, map of the South.
Let's do this.
I'm telling you, I am first very honored that you would join me tonight.
He has a very limited time spot, so we want to bring in Mr. Alan Sarrell right away.
Hey, how are you, Kathleen?
You know what? I'm going to make you do what I do, baby.
Man, what's crack-a-lackin', baby? What's crack-a-lackin'?
It's time for the Serious Side of the J. Ryle Show.
Don't try to call me out, princess. You can take your love and true purpose and stick it. She's a bitch.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network. Network.
This week on The Serious Side.
David Wildstein, the Port Authority official, just wrote back, got it. Question was, who's going to crack first? Well, it seems that it's going to be David Wildstein. In a letter released by his lawyer, David Wildstein said that evidence exists as well, tying Mr. Christie to having knowledge of the lane closures during the period when the lanes were closed, contrary to what the governor stated publicly in a two-hour press conference 3 weeks ago.
Mr. Speaker, Mr. Vice President, members of Congress, my fellow Americans. Today in America, a teacher spent extra time with a student who needed it and did her part to lift America's graduation rate to its highest levels in more than three decades. An entrepreneur flipped on the lights in her tech startup and did her part to add to the more than 8 million new jobs our businesses have created over the past 4 years.
American families have been falling out of the middle class in record numbers. The combination of lost jobs and millions of foreclosures means a lot of folks are homeless and hungry for the first time in their lives. One of the consequences of the recession that you don't hear much about is the record number of children descending into poverty. The government considers a family of four to be impoverished if they take in less than $22,000 a year. Based on that standard and government projections of unemployment, it is estimated the poverty rate for kids in this country will soon hit 25%.
Good morning and welcome to the Serious Side of the TJRS, broadcasting live from the Smooth Jams Jazz Cafe, right here on the TJRS Radio Network. Good Sunday morning to you, folks. Today is February 2nd, 2014, and you're in tune to the Super Sunday edition of the Serious Side of the J. Ryle Show. And, of course, I'm J. Ryle, and I never share the stage for myself. Let me introduce you to the key players. First up, she's the host of the True Purpose Development Show. She's also the host of Ladies First Radio, a regular on the J. Ryle Show. She's the host of the she's the author of the book, I should say, Pregnant in the Spirit, and the host of the television show called Transforming Detroit, which is actually seen in Detroit and in Canada, as the princess like to remind us. Let's say good morning to the one and only Dr. Princess Adia. Good morning, Doc. How are you?
I am doing very well. Good morning, Jay. How are you?
Doing good. I can't wait to get into the conversation. I'm almost like that preacher. There's a pastor out there who had a church service. It was on football Sunday, and he had a service in 10 minutes. I almost feel the same way about this show. but we are committed to do it. So let's get it done so we can get it over so I can prepare for Super Bowl Sunday. Glad that you're in the house.
Yes.
The man who gets the first and last word here on the Sirius side, my right-hand man, the guy who really holds, he's the glue that holds everything together, the one and only Mr. L.E.S. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Jay. Good morning, Dr. Adelia. How are you guys doing this morning?
Very well. Good morning, Mr. L.E.S.
Outstanding, Mr. Elias. We have a great show on tap for you. We have a lot of things to talk about. And, of course, our colleague Jerome Esprit from EspritRadio.net will be here momentarily. Yes. Can't wait till he gets here. But in the meantime, between time, we have things to get into. Let's get into the show. We have a great show. Once again, let's get it started so we can get it over with real quick. It's time for Super Bowl Sunday right here. I tell you, I can't wait. But we have some serious stuff to get into, so let's do it. All right, first up on the topic, yeah, liar, liar, pants on fire. You know, this is the third week in a row we've covered a story involving Governor Chris Christie from New Jersey, which is a first here on the serious side, but this story is a story that just keeps on giving. Mr. Elias, it came out Friday that this guy knew more than he told us during that two-and-a-half-hour nonsense of a press conference he had a few weeks ago. Your thoughts on this particular topic?
Well, Jay, like I said, it's the first of many things that's going to come out, man. Look, man, this guy, like, I got to agree with Jerome Esprit, and the government, there's not too much of this guy. They don't run by this guy. He's a big bully. He's a man that always has to be in charge of what he has to be in charge of. So instead of him just owning up to it, he's gonna deny, 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 and now, and the mortal words of Malcolm X, the chickens have come home to roost, man. This is the first of many things that we're going to find out this guy did. The first of many. They're going to start coming out of the woodwork with all the things that this guy's done.
Well, we mentioned this last week, Dr. Princess of Day. I'm not sure if you were there because I know you were a little under weather last week. We talked about how, you know, everybody are good soldiers and everyone's going to play ball until attorneys start getting involved. And when people started lawyering up, you can kind of see the writing on the wall. Your thoughts?
Well, I said last week, no, the week before last, or whatever week it was that we discussed this, but I did say that it's going to come out. I said eventually we'll all see the truth and that he had to know something. He had to have known something. And you know how it is in the White House or in politics period. Well, he's not in the White House, but, you know, what I'm saying is the government, period, that it's political theater. And just by the way that his – I wasn't impressed with the speech, and I went back and listened to it actually after the show. And I wasn't impressed. And I stood by what I said in the beginning that we were going to find out that he had more to do with it than what he was letting on. So all I could say is I told you so.
Well, now, the Port Authority person, the guy by the name of David Wildstein, was the first to crack. He released a statement through his attorney saying, look, bottom line is that the governor is not being honest about what he said during his press conference. And the big thing, Mr. Elias, and the reason why this guy is starting to talk is because he wants the Port Authority to pay for his legal fees. And it sounds like the Port Authority is wavering on that. So it's almost like a situation where he's saying, look, you hook me up, I'll tell you everything I need to know. Do you think he will crack and tell the truth? And what do you think about the remaining people who are part of the Christie administration? Do you think they're going to step up and say, hey, you know what? I'm not going down for you, big boy. We're going to start chirping like canaries.
Oh, without a doubt, they're going to start, Jay. I mean, this guy, you know, if the government is smart, if they're smart, they'll make a deal with this guy. And then the rest of these people are going to start singing like canaries, especially if he's got emails and all other stuff to verify what he's saying. Dude, it's just the first of many things that are going to come out about Christie. This guy is, I mean, he's a bully. And he's bullied people all along. And he's going to sit back and say, well, I never had any idea of what's going on. This is not me. I never knew that this was going on in my administration. If you didn't, then something's wrong with you. For shame on you for not knowing what's going on in your administration, and you have a small administration in the White House. Really, this is government. This isn't the White House.
Well, but wait a minute
now.
There's
not that many branches. It's not that many branches of the government and the state level, Jay. Come on, this guy's he's it. They ran everything by him.
But you're saying that you think these people are going to talk. Scooter Libby to this day has he went to jail for Dick Cheney, and he still to this day, as far as I'm not aware if he said anything differently. But he's
how much money did he get from Dick Cheney? How much money did he get from Dick Cheney?
I mean, I don't know. I mean,
you're talking apples and oranges. Dick Cheney, and that's what him and President Bush fell out about, because they wanted him to pardon his sins. And what did President Bush do? I'm not going to pardon his sins. He's done. He's going to stay right where he's at. I'm not going to pardon his sins. I'm not going to give him clemency. I'm not going to grant him anything. He's done. That's why he's mad at President Bush to this day.
Yeah, but to say that, you know, Cheney paid him is silly. So do we have facts for that, or is that just something you think he did?
Okay, well, it's something I think he did. I don't know about the facts, but hey, and that life of war, according to Dick Cheney, that I watched the documentary, my man is still mad at George W. for what he did. Still mad because he didn't pardon him, because he probably promised Scooter Libby a pardon, that he's gonna get Bush to pardon him, and he didn't.
Yeah, and you know, you can say what you want about President Bush. I mean, I think the guy was just a horrible president, but I think that he stood up for what he felt. I think he felt he was doing the right thing, and you know, he has that cowboy mentality where, you know, he feels that, look, I can do what I want to do because I'm the president of the United States. But he does have values, I think, and the bottom line is that he would not, and Mr. Elias is absolutely correct, he would not pardon Scooter Libby. And to this day, as far as we know, Scooter Libby is going to take it to the grave that the vice president wasn't involved. Who knows, maybe when Dick Cheney dies, we may hear about that, but until then, no, we haven't heard anything. 347-850-1272. It's 10 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the Serious Side of the J. Rouse Show, which happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS Radio Network, online radio at its best, Super Sunday. Big game is later on today. A lot of people are looking forward to that, including myself, but I can't say it enough. But until then, we definitely have a show to do, and we're talking about what's going on with this mess with Chris Christie. Let me go back to you, Dr. Princess Aldea. This guy wants to be president. Now, I'm not sure why he didn't run in 2012. Maybe he felt he wasn't ready. Maybe he felt that, you know, President Obama was too hard of a foe. He didn't want to have a defeat on his record. But now that President Obama is going to be out the way in 2016, I think this guy felt that he had an opportunity. What does this do to his presidential aspirations? Do you think he could get past this? It's only 2014. You know, 2016 is a long way away. Your thoughts?
I think we've had enough. I think America has had enough. I think we've, it's been about, it's been a whole nearly eight years that we've had to deal with the GOP and their mess. And I think political theater has unveiled itself in its greatest form in the last two terms. And I think it is clear in the minds of so many Americans that, wow, the people in the White House never really cared about us. Huh, this is different, what's happening. And it's happening under the watch of President Barack Obama. Now, I don't, you know, some people, they put their thumbs down. I was asking a group of younger people yesterday in their early 20s, and every last one of them put thumbs down on President Barack Obama. And it was funny because when I asked them what was the scenario and why, they really couldn't, they didn't have much to say, but they just gave it a thumbs down. And it's because they've never seen so much drama in their lives. And it's disheartening to realize the truth sometimes. The truth hurts, you know, that cliche. So when you talk about Chrissy here, I don't think he has a chance. But I think because he realized, I mean, who else is on the ballot? This is going to be so interesting to see who trying to run, because it's going to be hard. It's going to be a hard act to follow for the next president, and also seeing the troubles that President Barack Obama has had to experience with Congress, the current Congress. It's just going to be very difficult. I don't think he has a prayer or a chance in hell, and especially right now that he's done, that things are, he's already being unveiled in his lies. I mean, do we need another liar? I mean, come on. He's already showing face to be someone that we can't trust. I mean, come on. Let's. And I don't think he has a chance. And especially now, and it's good that all of this is coming out. Hopefully it'll keep coming out so that it can stay fresh in the minds of the people and they don't seem to forget, because they always seem to forget. The majority seems to forget when it comes down to it. And then when we make a choice and the person ends up getting in the office, you're like, oh, my God, I can't believe, what did we do? It's like, don't you remember all of the news and the tabloids and, you know, the destruction they were doing just on the local side? Come on. So I hope they keep it fresh in their minds and they keep it coming. All of his dirt, that keeps, dirty laundry keeps coming out.
You know, Mr. Elias, politicians lying is nothing new. I mean, it's just like anything. I mean, just like children. Children get caught, their instincts tell them to lie. You know, hey, lying to get me out of it. I don't want to get in trouble. I'm going to lie. That doesn't make them necessarily bad politicians, does it?
No, Jay, the Republican Party somehow has a way of, man, making dirt not stick to them, man. And I don't understand it. You know, we look at, you know, but the Republican Party, where the guy told his wife he was in the Appalachian Trail,
the governor of South Carolina, former governor,
right?
Yeah.
And what happened? He got reelected, you know.
Did
but,
he get
hey,
reelected? I didn't think.
Yes.
He got reelected.
Yes, he got reelected. Yes, he did.
Really? I have
yes,
to go back
did.
And look that up. I thought he had lost, and I thought he was trying to make a plea to get back into office this past year, but I never followed up on it. So you're saying he got reelected to what, the governorship?
No, I think he ran for Congress or something like that. He got reelected to Congress or something like that in South Carolina.
Okay, we'll verify that. Okay. Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the Republican, like the one guy who was in the bathroom, you know, playing footsies with people. You know,
yeah, he's retired.
You know, nobody. Mm-hmm. Yes, but hey, he didn't retire right away. He kept going. You know, it's just look, man. The Republican Party has a way of not just saying, hey, I don't care, whatever you say, I don't care. I'm gonna keep going with what I'm going with. I say what I want to say. I do what I want to do, and this is the way it works. The Democratic Party, on the other hand, they don't. They run like cowards. Like we had this argument before about Anthony Weiner when he was out there and everybody said, "Oh, he should retire." No, I wouldn't have. I would have never stepped down. I'd have just kept going. And my constituents would have told me, "I'm not going to be reelected." Not nobody in Congress. Not the people I work with. Nobody else but my constituents. If my constituents didn't want me out, then I would have never left. Bottom line.
You know, but see, that's a double-edged sword. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, to me, you can't have the monkey see, monkey do type mentality. You know, when you run for office, Dr. Prince's idea, you know, you're held to a higher standard. And if you cannot abide by those rules or standards, then, you know, in my opinion, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, you need to go. And because the Republicans are getting away with it, doesn't necessarily make it right, does it not?
Well, of course not. Of course it doesn't make it right. And bottom line is, I don't, you know, something about that saying when they say, oh, when you're elected to political office, then you have a higher standard. No.
You are held to a higher standard.
Okay, no. We should elect people who already live by the standard regardless.
Well, I agree.
You know, the moral of a person, you can tell that they live to a high standard, period. Regardless of being elected in the White House, that's the purpose, I think, of going back and seeing all the things that they've done or not done, and they bring out things that have happened to a person 20 years before. But I think what happens when it comes to the Republicans, no one seems to care. Because like you said, in a Republican part, a Republican is a Republican. Most times they're just diehards. And you have the liberals and then you have the Democrats. And when we do stuff, well, I'm not going to say we. See there? I can't believe I just did that. I just can't even believe I just said we, like blacks are Democrats. Oh, my God, I can't believe I just said that. But that's not what I mean.
Most of them are.
I know, but I can't believe I just said that because I totally don't believe that. But I'm just going to say when the Democratic Party comes up, the dirty laundry somehow is magnified, it seems, at a greater intensity. And I would say why. Because we've been dominated predominantly by a Republican congressman party and the GOP, and that's why. So they've been like, they'll put that knife up in a Democratic back and turn it and twist it up and pull, try to just kill them to death. I mean, kill them after they're dead. I mean, I'm telling you. So that's why it always seems like ours, you know, I don't know. I think the people who even run for the Democratic Party, they even understand that. They see how it goes, and maybe they just bail out because they're like, I don't even want to face it. I don't even want to deal with them. I don't want to even get them started because if they get started, they're going to pull all kind of stuff out that what didn't even mean what it meant, and it's just going to make me look even trash. So maybe that's why they get out. Maybe they just don't want to deal with what is common, has been common politically when it comes to, you know, going up against the, you know, the Republican Party. Maybe that's why. But I think that we have just a scenario of, I mean, it's been the way things have been run, and the GOP, they're corrupt themselves, and they're not for the people. It's all big game to them. And we need to reelect. We need to reelect. Start there. That's where we'll really start seeing some changes. That's what we need to do.
Well, here's the bottom line on this particular story. And I'll start with you, Ms. Elias. Do you think Chris Christie's going to go to jail behind this?
No, I don't think he'll go to jail. I don't think he'll go to jail behind it.
Some laws he's broken, Ms. Elias. Some serious laws that he's broken. So let me say this. Let me be responsible. Let me make sure that I preface my statement by saying that if this is true, what they're saying about him, he's broke some major laws, Ms. Elias. That being said, do you think that this man's going to go to jail?
No, I don't think he'll go to jail. I think he'll get off with a light tap on the wrist, and he'll be done with politics. But no, I don't think he'll go to jail. No, I don't. It's not set up for him to go to jail, Jay.
What does that mean?
Our justice system is not set up for him to go to jail. So no, I don't think he'll serve a day in jail.
Our justice system is not set up for him to go to jail. Dr. Princess O'Dea, do you believe that?
I just said that, absolutely. He's going to get away with it. To a certain extent, I don't think he'll go that far. I don't think he'll go as far as to incarcerate the gentleman.
And he'll make a plea deal, and then he'll, if he does do any jail time, he'll do like 5 months in a country club jail, and then they'll let him out, and then he'll write a book and become very famous, just like them clowns did in the Watergate scandal. Tell me how that worked out for you. Hell, politics is done. It's done set up for us, man. And what happened to the clowns in Watergate? Them cats got out and became more richer and famous than they were when they were in office. Now stop. This is not going to do a day. He's not going to do a day in jail. If he does do a day, it's going to be somewhere for 6 months. Then he'll come out and write a tell-all book about what he did, and everybody's going to buy it, and he's going to become so rich, and it's going to be unreal. And that's the way it works in this world. It's not fair. It's not fair.
As he walks the countryside, on his sabbatical. It's not going to be anything major.
I think that's the reason why people have problems with politics and, you know, in the first place, with politicians, because it seems to me that you can break the law and get away with it. And you know, common folk, you know, if they were in that situation, they'd be going to jail. But you know, you guys are saying, and it's disheartening to hear that, to be perfectly honest with you, because this guy has broken some major. We're talking about taking Sandy relief funds and using this as a political wallet. Hey, listen, if I like you, I'm going to give you some money. First of all, it's not your money to give. Some of that money came from the federal government. So you're going to sit here and say, oh, well, you know, I'm going to go ahead and, you know, hey, we decide we're going to pay you off. Since you like me, I'm going to give you some money. Money that's not yours. I mean, it's hypocritical, and they should be in jail. He should go to jail for a long time. $3 million, $6 million, whatever the amounts are. That's not chump change, Mr. Elias.
It's not. Jay, but okay, Jay. What happened in the White House? What happened in the Watergate scandal? What happened?
What do you mean what happened? What are you talking about?
What happened to those guys in the Watergate scandal? Did they get, you know, they did 5 or 6 months in a country club jail in Gadoff, and some of them are radio show hosts, some of them wrote books, you know, all this, man, look, dude. That's just the way this justice system works, man. When we talk about justice, it's just us. It might be disheartening, but it's the truth, man. It is the truth. If he does do it, he's going to get off. I hate to say that. He's going to get off. If he does do any jail time, it's going to be a minimal amount than anything else. Hell, think about how people pay taxes. You and I, we pay how much taxes? How much do the rich people pay in taxes? We pay like 38% in taxes. How much do the rich people pay? 15%? It's an unfair world. It's an unjust system, Jay. It is. It's an unfair world. And hell, the corporations, they cry about welfare all the time, how people are on welfare. What about corporate welfare? Well, they give all this money away to different people, and they give money away here, they give money away there. Hell, BP, where I work at, They get subsidized by it. They make billions and billions of dollars in profit. And if they do a project and they get it done in a specific amount of time, the government subsidizes money for them. And they don't have to pay any taxes on this money that they're making. So when we talk about, well, it's just disheartening. Hell, it's disheartening to get corporate welfare. You got a child who can't even eat. The politicians are trying to cut welfare to people that so they can get jobs. You know, so they can get them to eat, and then they won't even create jobs. They're talking about you should create your own jobs. Really? How do you create your own job if you can't get enough to eat? So when we talk about a system that's fair and unfair, I'm sorry. It is what it is. It's just us, and that's just the way the world is. It's an unfair justice system.
All right, let's get out to the phone lines. I know we're almost done with this break. You have a few minutes, too. 4 minutes left in a break if you want to comment on this Governor Christie situation. Let's get out there at 347-850-1272. Ms. Elias, who do we have on the line, sir?
Yes, Stiletto on the line with us.
Good morning, Stiletto. Welcome into the Sirius side. What's your comment?
Good morning, Mr. Roll. I don't have a comment yet. I'm just sitting back listening.
All right, well, yeah. Okay, well, I'm sorry about
that. Yeah.
Okay. All right, that's fine. Just raise your hand. Looks like sometimes the board acts up and it tells us that we have a caller or a listener who wants to make a comment, and that's what it said in your case. So we'll go ahead and put you back out there, and if you're ready, just press 1 and press 1 again, and we'll keep our eyes and ears open for you, okay?
Thank you, sir.
And be safe on the highways. All right, let's get to Jerome Esprit before we close this set out. Jerome, we're talking about Governor Christie. Good morning, sir. We're talking about the fact that this guy, you know, I tell you what, it's starting to come out that he knew more. I think we all knew this, and we all talked about this last week, that once people started lawyering up, that then you're going to really see who's committed and who's not. And the bottom line is, Jerome, folks are starting to sing. Your thoughts?
Oh, that's not surprising. I mean, I think we knew a long time ago he was a bully. Like, only thing that it takes in an administration for people to start singing is for you to, when someone throws you under the bus, they're going to start singing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not really surprised that was going to happen. It's just that I think that people had too high of expectations of Christie. You know, again, I don't think he would have won his last race unless he rigged it like all other Republicans did, you know, when they gerrymandered the districts for Congress. What he did was he moved the race so that he didn't run at the same time Cory Booker because that brought more Democrats out. So he's been manipulating that thing all along, and people kept saying, oh, yeah, look, he's bipartisan and people like him in Jersey. You're about to find out how much somebody really likes the bully. Once he takes one blow, everybody else is going to take a swing at him. That was easy to see coming a long time ago.
And you're right. You started looking at his poll numbers. His poll numbers started to drop. And the bottom line is that, you know, we said this last week, that when you do something, you know, a lot of times politics don't affect the common man. And what I mean by that is that the president may say, hey, look, we're moving in the right direction. And most people say, yeah, we are. But there are people out there who actually feel it. When you start dealing with situations that really gets next to the common folk, like, you know, tying up traffic or withholding hurricane funds, and people, everyday people are trying to rebuild their lives, I tell you what, that's a quick way to become very unpopular in the state that you won by a landslide.
Well, more important to the in the big picture is that nobody really takes a shot at you until they figure out if they can knock you out. And so people weren't really going against Christie too much because he wielded so much power. Like, he's mean. And like I said before, on the Republican side, they're very mean-spirited. So they usually put everybody in line on the Republican side. Democrats are the ones that will turn on you in about 10 seconds. They are easy to turn on you. Republicans is a little bit more difficult. You know. I don't know. I mean, that's more kind of in line with what's going on now, is that the evidence or the people who he strong-armed is not in the party, and now they actually have to investigate. They would never have gotten an investigation because he worked as a U.S. attorney who was appointed. Mm-hmm. He was appointed by Bush. It wasn't like he earned. It was a political appointment to begin with. But now you're about to find out the people who he can't scare no more. The reason he can't is because nobody's going to go to jail for Chris Christie. So when it really comes down to it, if there's an option, Chris Christie is going to go to jail first. So if it was just about losing your job, Chris Christie can kind of bribe them out of that. But right now, we're talking about, you know, committing a crime. So nobody's going to go to jail for Chris Christie.
Yeah, I wouldn't go to jail for Chris Christie either. Let's try to sneak a couple of phone calls in here. Let's sneak them in here real quick, Ms. Elias. Who do we have on the line, sir?
First, we have Kellywood.
Kellywood. One of our colleagues. Good morning, Kellywood. How are you?
Good morning, Jay, Mr. Elias. I'm in the serious side of the Jay Ryle Show. I am
good
so
morning.
Glad you guys are talking. And Princess Dr. Odelia, Dr. O. The thing that I'm astounded at these Republicans, the people in general, don't realize at this point you're going to get caught, especially if you're leaving a trail. Back in the day when Nixon and all those guys were doing the things that they were doing, even Kennedy, there was no paper trail. There was no Internet. I knew that something was up with Christie when the whole scandal came out about the George Washington Bridge. And being a fellow New Yorker and knowing how important that is, and from the number to close down the lanes of people, actually someone died because an ambulance couldn't get through. And he stood there and he was like, I had no knowledge. And I believed him. I was Team Christie. Now this? I'm just like, and then it's like it was almost like, you know, when President Obama came there, that almost kind of solidified him being a human. We've all been hearing these tactics, him being a bully, but then we'd see that photo op or that video op of, you know, when the whole thing with the President Obama coming down, he took advantage of it, and then everybody was like, oh, he's a nice guy because he's a turtle. You know, he had his head in his shell, and when it's time to come out, he said, yes, he should go to jail. There's no way he did. Okay, I gave him a pass on the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Gave him a pass on the bridge. But now, and then the only people who didn't get money are people of color are still suffering? Come on, man. It makes no sense. So, yes, he should be thrown. They not only need to throw him under the bus, the train, the bridge, okay? They need to throw him under all of that, and then he needs to go to jail. And then he can get up there and tell them how he was working out, you know, because he made it short when he was doing it, telling his story about how he didn't know anything about it. He said, well, why didn't I respond to it then? Well, I was at the gym with my trainer. So every time he has a moment, he lets everybody know he's working out. Let's see him work out this.
Well, you know, you're one of our respected colleagues, and of course, you know, we're going to leave your mic on, and you can hang out with us if you like this morning. Let's get, well, I tell you what, we're going to have to take a break here. We are up, well, let's get Easy in here real quick. Easy's a little listener. Easy, good morning. Welcome to the Serious Side Show.
Good morning, Jay and everybody else. How are you today?
I'm doing good, man. What are your comments on Chris Christie?
Well, you know, Jay, when these things happen, you know, that's just the tip of the iceberg with Christie. You know, you got to realize something. He's in a state where they got gambling guys, okay?
Right.
And you've always heard about shady stuff going on in New Jersey for 100 years. You know what I mean? They got TV shows about Boardwalk Empire, about corruption. I mean, there's a lot of corruption there. So this is just for the iceberg. You wait till this stuff, when the grand jury starts pulling the right people in and getting all this information, there's going to be a lot of stuff coming out here, a lot bigger than Rich. I promise you that. That this bridge is going to be nothing compared to payoffs and contractors. You'll see all that.
Let me ask you, Easy, do you think he's going to jail? Do you think he's going to serve any time in prison?
Yeah, I do. I really do.
Really?
I really think. Yeah, I really do, because you know, there's got to be an example made of somebody, because everybody's not going to jail. You know what I mean? Sure, the guy's going to jail when they embezzle $1 billion and stuff. Or, I mean, you know, you see regular people going to jail for $100,000 with income tax, or working for a borough and they take, you know, 50 grand, they put them in jail for a couple of years, you know, so. I really think that, you know, Christie, you know, he's always talking about being so much for the little guy. I think they might give him the little guy treatment here and treat him like a little guy and put his butt in jail where he belongs. My friend.
Oh, you know what? Those are great comments, Easy. Hold on. And all right, folks, listen, we have to take a break. That's going to be our last word for this particular set. But we have a great show on tap for you. Coming up next, the president laid some things out in the State of the Union address. We're going to talk about those things. Is this guy a lame duck president? I don't think so. You're listening to the Serious Side on Super Sunday. We'll be right back after this short break. Smooth jazz coming up.
Hi, this is your resident map of the South, Moms and Little Donnas, kickstarting your weekend every Friday with Ladies First Radio of the Gay Rouse Show, a show for women, by women. Tune in every Friday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as my co-host Princess Odelia and I discuss everyday issues and offer inspirational solutions. From the East Coast to the West Coast to all over the world, Ladies First Radio keeps it real, spreading positivity one show at a time. So come be uplifted with Ladies First Radio, the J-Rouse Show, every Friday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's Ladies First Radio, the J-Rouse Show, a show for women by women.
Right now, oh, right.
Mr. Speaker, Mr. Vice President, members of Congress, my fellow Americans. Today in America, a teacher spent extra time with a student who needed it and did her part to lift America's graduation rate to its highest levels in more than three decades. An entrepreneur flipped on the lights in her tech startup and did her part to add to the more than 8 million new jobs our businesses have created over the past 4 years.
Three four seven eight five zero one two seven two is the number to call in. And today, today we're on the serious side of the J. Ryle Show. And I'd like all the panelists to say good morning. Good morning, Dr. Dea. How are you doing this morning?
I am doing absolutely awesome. How's everyone? Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Calliewood. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing fabulously great. I chose, instead of going to church, spend some time with you guys.
All right. And Jerome Spray, how you doing this morning, my brother?
Hey, I'm good, bro. How you doing?
I can't complain. Hey, I guess Jay stepped out of he left the switchboard, and he left me here barren. So let's talk about this. Jerome, let's talk about the State of the Union address with the president. He never put any information in what we're supposed to be talking about, so I don't know what we're supposed to be talking about. But, hey, let's talk about the president's State of the Union address. Do you feel that on the State of the Union address that the president hit key points that he needed to hit on the State of the Union address?
Well, the State of the Union, and I know I'm kind of guilty of not paying attention so much to the theatrics of the State of the Union, but it is a dog and pony show to some degree, because the people who criticize it normally criticize it for things that he says or that he implies and not what he says. So on this particular State of the Union, he's gotten rave reviews, and the Republicans, they're just pretty much complaining because he wants to do something. He's not asking for their permission. So on the State of the Union is when the president says, hey, here's what my general outline is going to be for this year, and he's asking him to get on board or not. And so I think in this State of the Union, he was very effective. I don't like the term lame duck. That's a term that people use when folks don't have to listen to you. Like, you know, you don't have any power. You can't make us do anything. But in the president's position, there's a lot of things that he can do. And I think that's a cop-out, and that's people being, you know, as far as media people are concerned, being lazy by acting as if the president doesn't have power to do some things. And now the Republicans are trying to get him to not react because they don't want him to do anything. So that whole term of, you know, him, I guess, being a dictator and whatever they were calling him is just so that he won't do anything. But I think that this term, he kind of laid out what he's going to do outside of Congress, and I think they just didn't like it.
Yeah, you're right about that. Thanks, Mr. Elias, for picking up that fumble that I had there. I'm back in. You're right, Jerome. And the thing is, you're right. Lame duck means he has no power at all. And I thought during the State of the Union address, Dr. Princess O.D., he laid out his agenda. And, you know, it was like, hey, look, guys, either you're going to do what I ask you to do, but the things I have executive powers to change, I'm going to change. And then, of course, you heard all the nonsense and all the hoodlums over there on Fox News. Oh, he hates that up and said he's going to just run things through Congress, you know, like George Bush didn't do the same damn thing. It's amazing how these people will sit there with a straight face and lie to the American people when they know damn well that this president has gone out of his way to try to work with Republicans. And not only that, the bottom line is that some of the Democrats are upset because they're saying, look, guy, step up. You don't have to sit here and take this crap off the Republicans. Dr. Princess, I'll do your thoughts.
I am so happy that he did what he has always done, and that is stood firm. Yes, I'm glad that he decided, you know, he came forward how he did and said, look, this is what I'm going to do, this is what I'm going to do, this is what I'm going to do. And I think what they ought to know is that when he says what he when he says he's going to do something, he's going to do it, and he's going to do it how he said he's going to do it. And some stuff he chooses to keep to himself, too. So they don't know what corner he's coming from, but he's going to make it happen. He has made things happen in spite of all of the tactics that they've used to bring him down, to shoot down his ideas, to shoot down the bills, and just every they have given him help. So now it's time. I mean, it's always been time, but I mean, hey, he's muscling up, and he has nothing to lose. This is his last term anyways. He's out of there, and I believe he's going to go out with a bang, and I thought it was an awesome, awesome, awesome presentation and speech, and I am very confident that he's going to make it happen. He is going to make it happen, and I think it's I love our strategic president. I've always said that he's a very strategic and brilliant man, and trust and believe he's for the people, for the people, and he's going to make
right.
it happen.
Yeah, the man you didn't vote for, actually. I just wanted to put that out there. But still, yes, now...
Wait, hold on. I voted for him. I didn't vote for him the first time. I voted for him the second time.
Wow,
you're right.
Jay,
you're right.
Really?
Okay,
all right.
Right.
I just want to make sure that we... Yeah, it was a low blow. I just wanted to take a shot at
that
you.
That was a low blow.
I'm sorry.
I didn't vote for him the first term. You're right. But do you know why I did it?
I don't care. It was just a joke. I didn't want to turn it into a segment. Thank you. So, Mr. Elias, you know, one of the things I thought was interesting that he mentioned during the State of the Union address, which, you know, I thought he would run from, to be perfectly honest, to be honest with you. He brought up the fact that, you know, he brought up Guantanamo Bay, and a lot of people are always on him about that. And for him to say, look, guys, the reason why this, you know, what it showed me, Mr. Elias, was look, there are more people involved. There are bigger things involved here. That's the reason why, you know, Gitmo's not closed. And so to sit here and act as if it's the president's call by himself, I thought that was masterful. The fact that he did bring that into the speech, because I was quite surprised when I heard it. To be perfectly honest with you,
I was too, to be honest, Jay, because that's one of the sticking points that the people always talk about. They said he was going to close Guantanamo Bay, and he didn't. So, I mean, he faces his problems head on that one. But, hey, man, look, what do you expect from this guy, man? I hate to use Dr. D's words, but he's a tactician, man, and he used it to his advantage. So what can you say, anything else besides that?
Looks like our colleague Collywood is still here. Colly, let me ask you: when you look at where the president is, as far as it's 2014, now it's a long way to go in his term. You know, and I heard Jerome said he doesn't like the term "lame duck president," and you're right; it's a term that I don't like, because when you're lame duck, that means people really don't have to listen to you. But it just seems to me that the Republicans have treated this guy like he was a lame duck president since 2009. You know, they've always said, look, here's the agenda. We're going to fight you. Whatever you say yes to, we're going to say no to. Even if we said yes before, just because it's coming out of your lips, we're going to challenge it, because we want to make sure that your presidency goes down in history as one of the worst times during the history of this great union that we're in. Your thoughts on that?
Well, Jay, you're absolutely correct. And the sad part about it is the Republicans aren't fighting the president of the United States. What they're fighting is an African-American man. For some strange reason, the government does not want to let this man, just because he just happens to have skin of caramel color like Jesus, you know, they just want to fight this gentleman from beginning to end. When it comes to them calling her lame duck president, that's just like this. This is their way of saying the N-word, but getting away with it, because they're doing everything they have to do to stop this person from trying to make good. Now, the only problem I have with the president, the only thing I have a problem with is that he claims the Affordable Care Act as Obamacare. And I wish he would not just, you know, let everybody else call it Obamacare. It just seems state what it was. It is the Affordable Care Act, because the Republicans were trying to get this into play some 10 years ago. And what they want to do is they want to find something so that they, you know, he's not Kennedy. He's not cheating on his wife. He's not, you know, he's not Christie. You know, now hopefully that there's nobody in his camp doing sneaky stuff that's older and he has to deny or, you know, and don't, you know, because there's, you know, it's, he's not just him. He's got, how many, I don't know how many, just Congress and just other people that he's responsible for. So it's a lot of work. So when I say all of that, I say that it being unfair, I think he's doing an excellent job with what he's given, what he's been put at the table, and what he's been able to eat and forced to eat based on his situation with these 300-some-odd people. He goes to work every day, and it's a fight. He knows that he's going to be fighting. And here's the deal. All he has to do is look back at the State of the Union address, the dude mad dogging him in the back the whole hour he was talking, the Speaker of the House. You can just tell by anything, nothing he said. He got no emotion. So you see, that's what he's going to work with every day. If you have to look at that face every day, I want to quit. I know he can't, but you know, you're fighting the demons every day. You have to look at that dude in those faces like that every day, and all you're trying to do is good for the American people. And you can look at that man and look at his face and tell he doesn't care about the American people. He does not. He's throwing just daggers. He's not even saying anything and throwing daggers.
It's interesting that you notice that, Callie Woody. And let me go to Jerome here. It's 5 before the hour. You're listening to the Serious Side of the Jay Ryle Show. Let me ask you something, Jerome. Do you think Boehner is really a bad guy? Do you think he's just caught up in a situation where he has to play this role, but at the end of the day, he really wants to work with the president?
No, I think it's a little bit of both, right? So he doesn't want to go down as some ineffective speaker, but at the same time, he doesn't like – you can tell when people don't like you, right, opposed to when they're opposing you. So this is – and this is a perfect example of racism, right? What happens is that you can have a white person be nice to you, and then people will say, well, they're willing to talk to you, but even though – although they're oppressing you, we kind of think that since they're talking to you, they must have an open door or something, or they somehow like you. But what happens is that when people don't like you, they normally stay close to you to make sure you don't get anything. So every time the president does something, they're saying, come through Congress. Let us try to work with us. You promised that you would work through Congress. But they promised to go against them. So technically, you don't have to go to somebody who you know is trying to sabotage you all day. That's not smart. So they're complaining that the president won't come to them. At the same time, every time he comes to them, they say, no, we'll give you something else, but we ain't going to give you what you want. And usually that something else is what they wanted anyway. So they keep, you know what I mean? So the thing is that with Boehner, just like a lot of people in Congress, they're only saving their own butts because you got to remember it's an election year. And we talked about this last year. We're already in February. All they're doing right now is raising money at home. That's why you're not hearing a debt ceiling. That's why you weren't going to hear too much about any kind of dissent from the Republicans around this time of year. They're raising money to run for office in November. So this is a very important time for your donors. You know, February, March. Matter of fact, your nominations are at the end of March, so your donor stuff is right around now, or, around February. So they're not opposing the president so much out in public because they don't want their poll numbers to get down too much more, but they're opposing any legislation just so they can go back and appease their districts. So Boehner is not his friend, and it won't go down as they had a philosophical difference. You can tell, I don't think that they like him. And that's why when the first lady was sitting next to him at an event, and they said John Boehner was teasing him about stopping smoking and tried to make a joke about the first lady, him not smoking because the first lady's there. That's why Michelle looked at him like he was crazy. Like, she doesn't have to play politics with them. His wife is not going to play politics with him. So I think they just don't. He just don't like him. The president is just a little bit more diplomatic about how he handles it. Yeah.
347-850-1272 is our call-in number, 347-850-1272. You're listening to the J. Ryle Show Super Sunday edition. Of course, it is the serious edition, as always, on Sunday morning. Coming up at the top of the hour, we're just a few minutes away from our third set. And, of course, in an hour from now, it's on a need-to-know basis with that young man you just heard, Jerome Esprit. Some great stuff I'm pretty sure is on the horizon. You know, when we talk about where the president is, you know, and I guess here's my question, and I'll go to you on this one, Mr. Elias, when we think about this president. One of the things that he said during the State of the Union that I thought was very intriguing when he talked about, first of all, he talked about the soldier. Kudos for him doing that. I mean, I thought that was one of the most emotional moments of the whole speech. I was really glad that he did that. And I was also glad that he acknowledged and put Boehner on the spot when he talked about, you know, son of a bartender. I thought that was clever the way he did that. I think a lot of people wanted him to, especially those on the hard left, really wanted him to go out there and stick it to the Republicans. And I think he did, Mr. Elias, but I think he did it in a nasty way. You know, he did it in a way where, listen, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do, and I'm going to point out the fact that you guys have not helped me do this, but I'm going to sound very nice because I still need your help. He's not dumb. He knows damn well that he still needs their help to get legislation through. So I'm going to be nasty. And so when the American people come back to judge this Congress at a later date, they'll say, you know, this guy really and truly, when it's all said and done, I think people will come back and say he really and truly tried to reach out to the Republicans, and they just weren't having it.
Well, you know, I think about this, Jay, what you just said, and our boss passed out a memo at work, and it said, in essence, I don't want your transportation. It's not happening all the time. I don't want your transportation talking to my techs. And I looked at and I said, so you don't want us to talk to our coworkers anymore, is what you're saying. And I was talking to this lady, and then she says to me, she says, well, he didn't actually say it like that. All he said was that it's not happening all the time, but I'd appreciate it if you guys wouldn't, if your transportation department wouldn't talk to my techs. You say, and you blew it out of proportion. I said, how did I blow it out of proportion? What did I say that he didn't say? And she said, well, he said it like this. I said, so if I tell you F you this way, and I say, well, F you, what's this? So, I mean, look, man, you can be as nice as you want to or nasty as you want to saying what you're saying as long as you get your point across. And obviously he got his point across because, hey, man, you know, I looked at the rebuttal of what the Republican Party had to say, and they didn't say nothing like usual. And it was even worse this time. The rebuttal was even worse this time.
You brought up an excellent point. I want to try to get the squeezes in before we get out of the set. You know, Jerome, that crap, what's going on here? Does everyone have to respond to the State of the Union? What the hell was that? That was the most ridiculous and absurd thing I ever seen in my life.
It just shows the infighting. They don't have a message. They don't have a direction. So when somebody says, you know, the Democrats or the president should listen to the Republicans' plan, what kind of plan do you have with five different responses to one speech? They're not united on their side. And so even if the president listened to one of them, the other four is not going to like it. So they don't have a message because they're in disarray, and their whole goal with the president is just to be disruptive. They don't have a message. They don't have a plan. They don't want you to have health care. They don't want you to have anything in particular, and especially because of the president. I think they just don't like the fact that they can't beat him. You know, and so as they started talking about the president, where it was more of a conversation of, in his first term, he's not a legitimate president and all of that other stuff, they just did not want to participate in the process. So they thought he was going to lose the second time. And once he won, they start saying that he's a lame duck. So whatever it is to not empower the president, which they can't do anyway, but whatever they can do, they're trying to do. So the Republicans don't have a single message because they don't know what works. They haven't been listening to the general public in a long time, so they don't have a message that works.
Yeah, and they're sticking to their guns on a lot of stuff, and it's amazing. You know, I love the fact that he called them out on Obamacare. Look, guys, over 40 times you try to stop it, it's the law. Let's you know, get on with it. I mean, I thought it was brilliant. I didn't know Easy, I didn't know your mic was on. I apologize. I didn't realize you were still active. Let me let you have the final word on this set.
Well, you know, I think everybody who follows politics kind of knew what President Obama was going to say. I mean, it was, you know, everything he said, I pretty much thought he was going to say. I'm sure he thought the same thing. And, you know, the lady that gave the rebuttal, that Kathy Mora, she was talking to us like we were six-year-old kids, you know, and it was like she was telling us a nursery rhyme. I mean, I didn't get that at all, you know. I mean, and I started doing some reading on it, and everybody else was saying it too, and a lot of the women livers and different women leagues, they're all up in arms over her, giving that speech, and they're talking about kids at home, and, you know, what's more, you know, the people at home are more important than what's going on in the House and Senate, and, I mean, she wasn't making no sense at all, that woman. So I think there's, yeah, I think that shot themselves in the foot, the GOP on that one. That's for sure. So that was a good thing for me. I was glad she gave it right.
Yeah, she had some swallowing issues, too. Glad you brought that up, Easy. All right, folks, listen, we're chugging right along. It's Super Sunday here on The Serious Side. Coming up next, we're going to talk about poverty in America. There are a lot of people that are suffering, and the numbers are staggering. We'll tackle it next. You're listening to The Serious Side of The J. Ralph Show on the TGRS Radio Network, online radio at its best.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network. Network.
The Trevor Project is the leading national organization focused on crisis and suicide prevention efforts among lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning youth. If you're feeling helpless or hopeless, there's always a safe place to turn. Call the Trevor Helpline at 8664-U-TREVOR. It's free and confidential, and you can talk to someone 24 hours a day. Or visit the website at thetrevorproject.org. Be proud of who you are.
Thank you.
American families have been falling out of the middle class in record numbers. The combination of lost jobs and millions of foreclosures means a lot of folks are homeless and hungry for the first time in their lives. One of the consequences of the recession that you don't hear much about is the record number of children descending into poverty. The government considers a family of four to be impoverished if they take in less than $22,000 a year. Based on that standard and government projections of unemployment, it is estimated the poverty rate for kids in this country will soon hit 25%.
It's 10 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the Serious Side of the J. Rouse Show, which happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS Radio Network, online radio at its best. Our phone number is 347-850-1272, 347-850-1272. Let's say good morning to the panel once again. Let's say good morning to the man who gets the first and last word, my right-hand man, Mr. Elias. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, sir. How's everyone doing?
Dr. Princess Aldea, the Queen of Inspiration, she's in this morning as well. Good morning, Doc. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Good morning, everyone.
The smartest man in the world, our political strategist, the man who really is in charge over here. I like this guy as well. He's the man. He really runs things underneath, folks. Y'all just don't know this. Jerome Esprit. Good morning, Jerome. How are you?
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing great. And, of course, our colleague, one of our sisters of the network, Callie Wood's in the house. Good morning, Callie Wood. How are you?
It's morning, and now it's time for us to say good morning.
Good morning. And, of course, one of our most loyal listeners, let's let this guy sit in on this set, our main man, Easy, from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Good morning, Easy. How are you?
Hey, just wait for that Super Bowl, Jay.
Yeah, absolutely. Can't wait for the Super Bowl as well. Say good morning to a couple of people who are listening as well. Say good morning to Lucinda. How are you? Good morning. Welcome aboard. Monica R., second time I've seen your name. Hello, Monica. Welcome into the Serious Side. Hello to Lexi W., listening in from Wichita, Kansas. Hello. How are you? Let me see. Can I say hello to a few more people before we get back into it? Good morning to Mary Linda from Ullin, Illinois. That's not far from where I was born. So good morning to you. Also to Felona from Ridgeview, West Virginia. Wow. Didn't expect to get anyone from there. And, of course, there's an Angelique R. from Argentina. Wow. Hello abroad. Mr. Elias, can we say hello to a few people in our chat room?
Of course can, Jay. We got Callie Wood with us. We have Easy Rider. We have a host of guests in there. We got Jay Early and a very lovely Val Singh.
Jay Early. Hey, Jay Early. Hello. Who else?
Val Singh, the very lovely Val
Singh. Oh, Val Singh. Love Val Singh. Glad you're in the house. All right, time to get in our third and final set. Don't forget now, we're about an hour away from on a need-to-know basis with Jerome Esprit. We're talking about poverty in the U.S. The numbers are staggering when you look at it. I mean, my God, first of all, one of the things I loved about what the president said during the State of the Union speech, he talked about how we need to raise the minimum wage. And it's amazing to me, the people that I know who are Republicans, who are so, they're against this. It's like, are you kidding me? How can businesses make money if you're doing this? Are you serious? And I love the fact that the president pointed out some of the employers who have already took the initiative to make these things happen. You know, preferably Costco. I had no idea Costco had taken steps to raise the minimum wage for their employees. The numbers, when you look at them, are staggering. Let me start the conversation off with you, Jerome. You know, I was reading a story about this young lady. She's a certified medical assistant. She makes just about $19,000 a year with no benefits, right? She has a car that has over 200,000 miles on it. The car is so old, she's afraid to drive it. Her and her daughters, Jerome, they stay with her mom, and she lives from paycheck to paycheck. How can this happen in this great country of ours, Jerome?
Well, you know, I don't even know a good way to say this, but our policies on tax benefits and wealth has been distributed upward. And it's disturbing to see people like the founder of Home Depot and all those guys talk about it's not the rich that are causing this problem. They did cause the problem by lobbying to make sure that all of our laws and all of the profit-sharing stuff goes to the wealth, goes up the goes up the ladder of wealth opposed to poor folks. And it's not a wealth redistribution. What it is a distribution of wealth on the side of the government on how we tax and how we allow people to have all of these tax loopholes. So wealthy people aren't paying their fair share in taxes. And I think the president ran a whole campaign on that the very first time he ran. And everybody acts as if they're surprised. But it's been going in this direction for the last 30, 35 years. And so now we're getting this real big disparity in income gap where wealthy people cannot understand. And, I mean, they started making up terms like the job creators, which is bogus and crazy anyway. But
right.
They don't understand that if nobody has any money to buy your products, there is going to be no product. So you can't hire somebody if your workers can't afford to pay for it. It's an old Henry Ford model. Just understand, you got to make sure your workers make some money so that they can buy your product that you're selling.
You know, 50 years ago, Dr. Princess Odia, you know, President Johnson declared war on poverty. But yet and still, you know, I read some of the numbers earlier. I mean, the bottom line is that we're not getting any better. I mean, the numbers, when you start really kind of digging into them, they're really alarming because, you know, you think about people who live out in the suburbs, right? You say, oh, well, they stay out in the suburbs. You know, these people have money. 65% of the people staying in the suburbs are living under the poverty line. So in other words, there are more people living in the suburbs who are poor than folks who live in rural areas. That was unheard of a decade ago. What say you?
Well, first of all, is that what's happening in the area of you know, with regards to poverty? And that's sad. People are living in the suburbs. I mean, it's a safer environment in many cases. Sometimes people choose to sacrifice living from paycheck to paycheck to live in the suburbs just to be in a safe environment for their children. There are more things that are available for our children with regards to education and the resources that you have. They are greater in the suburbs oftentimes than they are in the urban areas. The urban areas, when there's situations that when there's economic deficits, unfortunately, in the urban areas, crime really goes on an increase, and it becomes really not safe. I know even here in Michigan, a lot of people who live in the suburbs, wherever they can afford to, however they can, even if it's families living, you know, you've got households that they're all living together just so that they can stay in the suburbs. Case in point, I often talk about how I have a lot of children. I'll just call them my godchildren. I've got probably 50 of them. And a lot of them consistently come to my house, about 15 of them, and one day I never really got into the family, you know, like how they're living or whatever. I just, you know, I never really gave it much thought. And one day I was talking to one of the kids and asked them about their future, what they plan on doing. And first thing she said was, I can't wait until I have my own bedroom. And I was like, what do you mean you have your own bedroom? She said, well, they call me auntie. She said, auntie, I sleep on the floor. I'm thinking, what? She says, I sleep on the floor. I've been sleeping on the floor for about 6 years. I couldn't believe it. And I'm thinking, oh, my God. I said, you know, why? Well, my mom, you know, lost her job, da-da-da-da-da. She decided she's going to live with our family. And my grandmother let all of us stay there. So they've got 8 people living in a 2-bedroom apartment. And by the looks on the outside, you would never imagine. But these are the choices that people make just to survive on other levels and to remove themselves from all of the crime and things that take place in the urban communities that are in a poverty state. So I think it's just a matter of choice and safety and being able to really, you know, at least take advantage of some of the resources that you would never even find out in the urban community, unfortunately, when there is such great poverty.
Well, it's always disturbing when you hear situations like that. You know, let me go to you on this one, Easy, because these numbers are really kind of your wheelhouse. You know, poverty is up 16% in the suburbs of Pittsburgh, okay? It's up 27% in the suburbs of Providence. When you look at some of the numbers, 79% outside of Seattle. I mean, you know, in Austin, Texas, the number of poor has swelled to 143%. When you start really digging into these numbers, they are very, very alarming. And so you have to start asking yourself the questions, first of all, how do people end up in this situation? And then what can average Americans do to help? Or is there anything we can do to help?
Well, Jay, I'll tell you what. You know, they said that we're supposed to be putting on more jobs than ever this year. I hope that comes true. I was just doing a little bit of research on like the Waltons from Walmart family, you know. I mean, it's people like that who we need to help us. And, you know, just some staggering figures. Like the one Walton girl, they have other married names, but one's named Nancy. She's worth $4 billion. One's named Ann. She's worth $3.9 billion. One's named Alice. She's worth $35 billion. One named Christy. She's worth $39 billion. And it goes on and on. And that's not even counting the male people in the family. That's just four of us, the Walton family. And, you know, I just think it's ridiculous that they can't reach in their damn pocket and give these people a raise. I mean, geez, you know, I mean, you know, these people working retail, you know, whenever I go to a store, you know, I try to be extra nice to them. If I go to a waitress or something, I make sure I give them a good tip. You know, I try to do anything I can do to help these people. But, you know, really, it's going to be these big people with the big money, Warren Buffett, people like that, you know, that's going to have to get off of some of this money. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but, you know, that's easier said than done, and you're right, Easy. One of the things that Caliwood that's always alarming to me when they talk about the wealth of America, they said there's nine people who are, and I can't remember the percentage of them, but most of those people are folks that Easy just reeled off the names because they're a part of the Walton family, which, you know, obviously owns Walmart, and that's why a lot of people can't stay in Walmart. When you look at it, though, and you talk about trying to help people, I mean, how can you do it? Because, you know, people, you know, a lot of times millionaires get criticized because they're not doing enough. And it's like, well, you know, there are some out there trying to help the homeless. There are some out there trying to give. I mean, with the numbers so staggering, how can – I don't think we can ever help everyone that's in that situation, right?
Well, you know, that's amazing that you say that because I do a thing every Tuesday called Feed the Streets. And I've been doing it for
right.
4 years. And just recently, one of my friends started helping me where now I don't have to walk. I'm driving. And we had a fight. We literally had a fight because we feed the same 24 people every Tuesday. But we went down this alley and saw more people, and they were hungry, and she was feeding them. And I'm like, well, what about our people? And I realized that it's sad that there are people that are on the streets that don't have food, that don't have any place to go, that and we just walk by them. So when I started Feed the Streets, it was about feeding people who were less fortunate, not people who their circumstances are not because they chose it, they have no other choice. So we're having this fight on who to feed. It makes no sense. When I took the one meal I cooked for myself for Thanksgiving and fed 74 people. So you say, what
wow.
can we do? As one person, this is say, I'm one person. Now I have more help. But I'm one person, I fed 74 people. The leftover food, things that we take for granted, just giving them socks and shoes. So how do you do it? Yes, expect the government to do stuff. But what they're doing now is there's a section where there used to be eight people, and now they're completely gone. Last year, completely gone. There was a newsstand that this one gentleman slept under for 4 years. I went past it yesterday to give him the meal. It's gone. You see, they're trying to act like they're trying to make it seem like it doesn't exist, and it does. The government is not going to do anything for these people in the street because, one, they're not voting. They're not voting, so they're not helping them keep their jobs where they can steal the money and stop the bridges and do all the things that they're doing. So what we have to do is we have to band together one person at a time. So if I'm doing it now, my friend Gwen is helping me, and there's somebody in New York now that's doing it. I've got people on Facebook saying, okay, they're going to give me clothes, they're going to give me food, they're going to do these different things. Yesterday, I ran into a lady who runs a food bank two blocks from my house, and I was saying, this Tuesday, you know what, I don't even think I can feed the streets because I personally have no money. It's been coming out of my pocket. I'm walking to work, but I'm feeding the homeless. I meet this lady now. I walked home with enough food to feed my people for 3 weeks, and now my other friend's coming with a car, and I'm getting more stuff. So how do you do it? Don't keep your mouth shut. Don't close your eyes. When you see a homeless person smile, don't put your head down. First thing we do is act like you're on the cell phone or something like that. Acknowledge them. I know their names. It's Mercedes and James and Jim and LaGrange. Step outside of yourself and feed them. That's how we can start it. I'm trying to mean to preach. That's my time. I'll stop.
Well, no, listen, everybody's passionate about that. Jerome, but, you know, I go back to my original question. My original question is this. Is this just one of those situations that we're going to never get past? It's almost like racism. You know, you think that just when you think you have racism under control, well, you'll never have racism under control. I guess my point is that there are going to always be poor people, and there are going to be some people who are going to be in that situation because they just want to be in that situation, right? I mean, I don't think anyone wants to be poor on their own, but it's amazing how you have folks out there who, in some cases, could probably try to do better, but they won't. I mean, this is a very, you know, when I thought about this topic, Jerome, it was very disheartening when I started looking at the numbers. And I say, you know, right here in the greatest country of all, you know, a country that's sending aid out to all these other different countries, we have people right here at home that need our help. I mean, but listen, in fairness, there are a lot of organizations out there trying to feed people. I mean, how do we get to the end of the tunnel with this situation, Jerome?
Well, okay, so here is what's called a philosophical difference between Democrats and Republicans generally, is that they believe that, well, the Republicans believe that it's your responsibility to pull yourself out of poverty. But what happens is the government is responsible for a lot of this poverty. So I don't know if anybody remembers when George Bush was in office, but if you spend $1 trillion a year on war, when they get back, you need to take care of those people who are not, who don't have the resources, whose family's gone into poverty, and who are now homeless. So once you create that class, it's like Vietnam. We're talking about the 70s. So you're talking about the same conditions that exist now that existed back then. So we had a horrible financial recession. Then we're at war for 10 years. Where do you think that everybody's going to go? So now we are starting to blame the victims of this bad misappropriation of cash, where if we spent just $1 billion a year to stop our poverty, we wouldn't have none. We spend $1 trillion a year on war.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So, you know, and people act as if government has not done this before, right? We had free lunch in the parks when I was little. You know, we can go to the park, play basketball, then go where they had a lunch program. They could do that very easily right now. And again, in 2010, they signed into law the Healthy Kids Act, Obama's passed, set aside $1 billion to give breakfast, lunch, and sometimes dinner in poor areas. In that legislation, they specifically took out all of the requirements. You don't have to show ID. You don't have to do nothing but show up in your neighborhood elementary or junior high school. Now, the Republicans will not allocate the funding, but the funding's already there. They're not going to raise your taxes. They already put the funding there. So technically, we have money that we're sitting on to feed people who are poor, but it is one party that's holding out the allocation of money that's been put there since 2010. So we need to start understanding this as far as those people who are paying attention to politics or those people who are in media, the 60 Minutes and all those fools of the world. They need to come out and start exposing the people who are holding up the progress and the starvation of people in this country. I don't care if they're children, adults. Nobody should be starving like that because we're a wealthy country, and we would gladly spend $1 trillion to go fight somebody who didn't do nothing to us than to actually feed somebody. Now, how sick is that?
You know, Mr. Elias, I know that you're passionate about that as well, the fact that we're abroad doing all these different things. You know, we send out millions and millions of dollars of relief and aid to countries like, you know, Pakistan, countries who really and truly don't even want the freaking stuff, or if they do want it, they're not showing us that they want it by their actions. It's amazing how we do these things, but yet still, you know, Jerome Broad hit the nail on the head. We're fighting these wars all over the world. You know, all that money could be reinvested back into the people here in the United States. It is ridiculous, man, that we have all these people here that are just broke. They have no money. And there are people out there who are really and truly trying to make things happen. You know, that story about that medical assistant. She makes $19,000 an hour, a year. Think about that for a second. Who can live off $19,000 a year? I mean, and then these people are crying about raising the minimum wage, saying folks are lazy. That's the reason why they were. You know what? I want to strangle somebody right now because it's ridiculous that we have people out here making an honest living. You wonder why kids turn to drugs and turn to doing all these things. You know, why am I going to sit here and sweat like a Hebrew slave and work at McDonald's while I can go sell drugs and be riding around in a Jaguar Mercedes? So if you're not going to give kids the incentives to go out here and try to make an earnest living, don't bitch and complain when they turn to another life because they can't make enough money trying to do things the right way.
Well, here's my thought process. You know where this country is going along? It's called greed, man. How much damn money do you need? Half these corporations don't want to pay a minimum wage to people because they would cut into their profits. So that's why we can never get over it. As long as we have greed in this country, and I gotta be the richest person in the world. Hey, look, the Walmart, they give you, when you first go to a flood application there, they give you an application for welfare because they know they're not gonna pay you enough damn money. And these are the richest people in the world. Yes.
Are you serious?
Yes. These people give you application for welfare because they know damn well you're not gonna make enough money there to feed your family. So the bottom line is these are the richest people in the world, and it's greed that kills this country. Okay, you look at the steel mills. You know, we got to keep pumping out steel, and we're killing the environment. Why? Because we got to get richer. We got to have more money than anybody else has. I have billions of dollars, but I still need more money. How much money is enough money? If you had all the money in the world, would that be enough money in the world? Look, greed is killing this country. It's on this slowly on every level. It's greedy people out there that will not allow the middle class, which is what substantiates and which holds the country together. It's the middle class. It's not the wealthy people, because wealthy people don't spend their money like the middle class people do. So when you kill the middle class people off, guess what? You're killing the country off.
It's bottom of the hour. You're listening to the Serious Side of the J. Ryle Show. Every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS Radio Network, we can be heard. 347-850-1272 is the number to call. And Easy, do me a favor. Read those numbers again for those Walton ladies. I want you to read them nice and slow. I want this to resonate with people, the amount of money these people are making. Give me some of those numbers of the folks who are a part of the Walton family, which owns Walmart, by the way.
Okay. We have Nancy Walton, who's worth $4 billion, and that's not kind of what their spouses are worth now. I mean, they break these down in his money, her money, you know. You got Ann Walton, who's worth $3.9. Then you have Alice Walton, who's worth $35 billion. Then you have Christy Walton, worth $39 billion. This is net worth, okay? This is not like the company. This is net worth cash in. And, it goes on and on. I stopped at about four or five of them, you know, because there was like 20 of the Waltons that all had no less than $4 billion, $3 billion. And,
billion.
Billion.
Billion with a B, not million, billion.
Right. And you had Sam Walton, who died with $100 billion.
Wow. And look, and this is not an assault, on capitalism. I mean, look, if people can make money and do what they need to do, you know, God bless you. But when you start arguing about whether or not giving people a $3 raise – And like you said, Mr. Elias, this is all about greed. This ain't got a damn thing to do with nothing else. It is greed. Because, you know, that's one of the reasons why it's hard for me. As much as I love the Super Bowl, I have a Super Bowl party coming up. You know, if you're in the area, stop on by. I'm telling you, I'm fired up about the Super Bowl. But the one part of the Super Bowl that I cannot stand is that Papa John's is associated with the Super Bowl. And we all know Papa John's is the guy that famously talked about Obamacare. Here's another guy. He can sit around and make all these damn commercials and hang out with Peyton Manning, but he don't want to pay his people more money, or he don't want to give them the hours, because if I give them the hours, that means I'm going to have to pay for it. You know, it's ridiculous what these people are doing. And then they'll go out and spend, you know, $4 million on a baseball, or, you know, spend money on nonsense, but then there's people out there that needs to eat. Dr. Prisno, let me tell you something. I haven't been so fired up about a topic in a very long time, because this is ridiculous what's going on. Your thoughts?
Well, first of all, and you know I'm dear to me because I've experienced homelessness, and I experienced something I experienced in my valley. My last valley was it's so sad. It's so sad. I always thought of myself as a compassionate person. I thought of myself, I always would give my first time on my first mountaintop that I had experienced where I had a lot of money. And I would see people. I would see the homeless people, and I would give. And sometimes, you know, I've bought people homes, you know, so a couple of elders, I bought their homes so they didn't lose it as they were dealing with the politics of the mortgage industry at that time, et cetera. And I thought I was compassionate, employed a couple of homeless people, and they were great, you know, great staff, and, you know, employees at the time. But I never, ever, ever, until which time I went through my own valley, and it was so unexpected. I never thought, I had made it to the top. I didn't think I would have to go through anything again, you know. And I was able to sit and talk to these homeless people, sit with them and find out why they were in the situation they were in. And a lot of them had circumstances that are just that people go through. They lost a job, lost a wife. One man I'll never forget, he lost his wife, his job, and after some point he wasn't able to afford his home, and he had no family here. He had no one to turn to, and the homeless shelters were closed up, et cetera. It was sad to hear when some people would go to some of the homeless shelters and resources that are available, even they are so political, you would never believe the politics that are caught up even in those scenarios, where they will turn their back on a homeless person and put them right out on the street. I don't give a kick what the situation is. Until I had gone through my own valley in such a way, and I'm so grateful for that time that I experienced, I wasn't out on the street, but I could have been. I could have been like somebody else if it wasn't for family, and it wasn't for just my own innate, you know, character and what I was doing to push through. And I was blessed enough to get into some program where I was actually in a shelter, you know, and they had a high-class kind of homeless situation in this particular shelter, because churches came together and we would go to each church every week. I never thought I would be there. But I'm going to tell you, even in that, it was so political. I remember people being in the homeless shelter, and one person I remember, he had a job offer, but the job offer was for later at night. You know, they told him, if you want a place to live, you can't take that job because you're going to come back to the churches too late, and we don't want you to come in late. I saw them put a lady out of the program when she came back from work after working so late, and they had her to work overtime. She came in at 11 o'clock. They put her out. She had to pack her bag and leave. We are just society, period. It's issues individually, you know. It's so political, and we get it twisted. It's not about people. And what we have to do as individuals, we have to realize our own compassion. I think that's why we go through things. We go through things so that we can go where somebody else has been, so that we can come out and be compassionate and be able to be connected to the scenarios. A lot of times people don't do anything because they've never been there, and they don't know what it is to go through it.
Right,
but it's politics. It's there, and I'll tell you this. There's money that is allocated to the state. I said at a city council meeting, and in the city council meeting, they were yelling about $15 million that was sitting over that they were getting ready to go over into another fiscal year, and they hadn't used it yet. And they were saying, well, can you guys please set up some programs to do X, Y, Z? We've got $15 million sitting in this account, and we haven't done anything with it, and it's been rolling over for some years. I mean, are you serious?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, and the reason I definitely wanted to go to you because I knew you had experienced that. And it's just a shame. I mean, you know, we have about 10 minutes left before we have to, actually about 5 minutes left here before we have to shut this set down. I think what I want to do is go around the table and just get everyone's final thought on this particular topic. Let me start with you, Callie. What are your final thoughts on this particular topic?
My final thought is, you know, we just have to be more compassionate. We need to lift our heads up and just look and acknowledge people and do the best that we can to help those less fortunate than us, one person at a time. I know it's going to take more, but if we start off one person at a time, I think we can have a movement. Be the streets.
All right, appreciate you. And, you know, Wendy, kudos for what you're doing because it takes a big person to really dig in their own pocket, a caring person to dig in their own pocket to go out and try to feed people who are less fortunate than themselves. And I think that, you know, when you do things not to receive, you know, not to receive kudos or anything like that. I just think that the blessings will come. So thank you for doing what you do. Easy, let me get your final thoughts on this particular topic.
Yeah, you know, Jay, it all starts with the government. You know, they can do more than what they're doing, and I agree 100% with you about the money being spent on the wars and everything, and you know, like one tank costs $200 million. I mean, how much money could we – how many people could we feed with one tank or something, you know? And, you know, you got places like New York, state of New York, or city of let people, companies, corporations move in there for 10 years without paying any taxes. I think that's a crime right there, you know? And then they always skirt it, you know. They always have a loophole there, you know. They're making out like bandits. After that 10 years, they leave. I mean, so it don't make no sense to me, you know. How this government's running this? I really think there shouldn't be anybody starving in the United States. I firmly believe that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with that 110%. Let me go to you. Well, Dr. Prince, let me go ahead. Give me your final thought here on this particular topic.
I'm just going to say that we all can play a part in helping individuals. We really have to connect compassionately. Don't pass judgment on people that are homeless. We have doctors, lawyers, accountants, professionals, you know, all type of people that are in the homeless shelters. You can give, and you can give something. We have to step up and take responsibility for just being there to care and to give. Find out in your communities, in your local areas, what funds are available. Connect with your city council. Connect with people and try to make a difference. You want to get out of the scenario, do something about it. It's going to start with you giving.
All right. Well said. Jerome, man, give me your final thoughts on this topic, man. Do we have a Jerome? Jerome, you there?
Yes, I'm here. Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, it is more of a collective problem that we have in this country, and it's how we see the rest of the world. We've grown up in a country that says that the way that you prove that you have value is to prove that you're better than somebody else and that they don't have – you know what I mean? It's a way that we look at other people, and we need to correct that. We need a course change in that for years because we're conditioned to buy a refrigerator because the Joneses have a refrigerator, have this. So sometimes, you know, we get to points where people feel better about themselves just to see homeless people, which is sick. So it is a part of our responsibility to have a corrective course here, and so it's government that can do that. It's not the individuals that can do that anymore. It's not your job to pull yourself up out of poverty because you can't. It's a part of our collectiveness as a society to want to have a better society.
Yeah, man, well said, well said. I can't wait. Your segment's coming up in about 10 minutes. Mr. Elias, may give me your final thoughts on this particular topic, sir.
Well, like I said before, man, if we get rid of greed and the corporate welfare in this country and the wars, I'm like, easy, we wouldn't see anybody hungering in this country. You know, that to me, that's what's killing the country is the greed, the corporate welfare, and everything else that comes along with it. Hell, why are you not paying your fair share of taxes? Your corporations come in here, the government subsidizes a corporation, but they won't feed a homeless child. To me, this is just ridiculous for us to sit back and have children and adults who really want to work and put food on the table, and they can't work because, hey, look, there's no jobs created because we're playing politics in Washington, D.C. So politicians, get your head out your ass, create jobs, and then give a fair wage to people.
Yeah. Well said. Hey, I don't need to say anything, folks. I think that was enough. All right, folks, listen, coming up, before we go, a quick look at some news, some topics that made news this past week. Also, our Super Bowl picks, Chatterbox, and, of course, at the top of the hour, on a need-to-know basis. All right, folks, it's Super Sunday. We'll be right back. Don't go nowhere.
Omówiono najważniejsze sprawy związane z dalszym rozwojem województwa i kraju.
The week that was in the news.
And just finally, before we let you go, since we have you here, we haven't had a chance to kind of talk about some
I'm
of the...
I'm not speaking about anything that's off topic. This is only about the president.
Well, what about...
Thank you.
All right, so Congressman Michael Grimm does not want to talk about some of the allegations concerning his campaign finances. We wanted to get him on camera on that, but he, as you saw, refused to talk about that. Back to you. Why?
Let me be clear. Yeah, the DLC is not going to do this.
Folks, it's time for, before we go, a quick look at some stories that made headlines this past week. And Michael Grimm, he did not want anyone to ask him about those campaign funds, Jerome.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Isn't that stereotypical? Like, when, now, think about Chris Christie. Chris Christie is one of those people who bullied reporters himself. Remember? That's what he does. So
yeah,
you get aggressive with reporters, and you make them scared to ask you questions. And so, hey, he just tried to bully that kid.
Oh, my God. You know, his close friend, you know, he's a big supporter, Mr. Elias, from Chris Christie.
Well, hey, man, he told that guy, if you say something, I have to tell you, I'll break you in half. I have to throw you over there. I'm like, wow, this guy's, he was serious about his, man. He wasn't letting nobody talk about him and his corruption.
Yeah,
wow.
But you know he's a bully. Because I tell you what, if that had been an NFL player holding that mic, he wouldn't have ran up on him like that. That's for doggone show. So,
nah,
yeah, they do that to people who they get away with, talking that
and
nonsense.
The media
too, that's ridiculous.
The media would have treated it different, too. Because remember what they did to the Seattle Seahawks guy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, Richard Sherman, you're right about that. Good ass, good looking out right there, Jerome. All right, listen, there is a video that's really starting to ruffle some feathers. It was made by Native Americans, Native Indians, I should say, Native American Indians, whatever you want to call them. Bottom line is they're going after the Redskins, saying that, okay, you can call us everything in the world. Native Americans call each other doctors, lawyers, attorneys, but we do not call ourselves. And at the end of the video, Callie, would they show a picture of the helmet of the Washington Redskins? Your thoughts?
Wow. Well, I think I take that just like the N-word. So I say take it off. Redskins, it don't make no sense anyway. Washington, it should be actually, you know, they should put the White House. Matter of fact, they should have put a picture of President Obama now as their new logo.
Jesus Christ, Washington president.
Exactly, Washington president. Yeah, that's what I feel on that one.
Oh God, that sucks. What about you, Easy? You a big football guy?
Well, I don't, you know, with the way the public is and the media is right now. You know what I mean? Who knows? Damned if you do and damned if you don't.
That's true. That's true. That's true. Dr. Prince, you spent time with the Indian smoking peace pipes. What do you think about this Indian commercial?
Oh,
Curly Callie Wood, and yes, I did. Okay, you just keep getting those little daggers out there this morning, Jay. Yes, I did. It was a wonderful experience.
I know how to create
my own little circle. Yes, it was. It was great.
Yeah.
Great.
You and Chief Sitting Bull, and what did they call you? Little Big Mouth. What was your Indian name?
I don't know.
Oh, let me pull up. Oh, God. All right, folks. Y'all hear it. It's Super Sunday. And it is time for our Super Bowl pick. And let me go to the man who had the worst winning percentage this year, Jerome Esprit. Jerome,
I know you're not calling me out. I know that. No, it is.
The numbers don't lie, Jerome.
Like
the numbers don't lie. All right, Jerome, you have a chance to repeat.
Look, I got 100 on the days you didn't have a show, so that's your business.
Okay.
Here we go.
Okay. All right. So redeem yourself. Denver or Seattle?
Come on now. Denver.
Boy,
I told you last week.
That's a weak bet. You picked the AFC Championship, but that's weak. All right, Jerome. Good for you. Callie Wood, Super Bowl pick.
You know what I'm talking about? Listen, you don't put a sorry Steve on me. I am Seattle Seahawks all the way.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, girl. Seattle Seahawks. All right, Easy. I'm sorry that the Pittsburgh Steelers didn't make it, my friend, but I need a pick from you.
I'm still going to the Steelers. Some way they can get there. I don't know how. There's still time for the game. You still got hope.
Okay, you're delusional.
I'm going for Denver.
All right, Dr. Princess O'Dea, it's a game called football. They have this oblong ball that they throw back and forth. The teams that are playing are called the Denver Broncos, which is named after a horse, and the Seattle Seahawks, which is named after a Seahawk. So now, which team do you pick for the Super Bowl?
All right. I know I'm not all into the football, but I watched
the
game.
Yeah, but a horse is bigger than a Seahawk. So I'm trying to set it up. You said a horse.
I'm for Seattle. I'm for Seattle. That's where I'm.
Who's the quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks?
I don't know. He's the quarterback.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Elias, give me your Super Bowl pick, sir.
I think I remember. Was it that young guy with the dread?
Yes, that's him. Yeah, he's the guy who said that at the end of the game. That's the quarterback. Yeah, good job. Mr. Elias, man, who you picking, dog?
I got to go. Hey, man, I want to go with Seattle, but I got to go with Denver, man. The weather's going to be on this side, so.
Well, like I said yesterday on the Jay Ryle show, I'm picking Seattle for all the wrong reasons, but I think that Denver is going to win the game. And on that note, folks, it is time for Chatterbox. And Chatterbox is where we kind of read comments from either our chat room or on social media. And since I have not been doing my job on social media, Mr. Elias, man, who do we have from our chat room?
We got Easy Rider when he says, someone is going to jail. Wait till they start riding on each other. I'll bet there's more than just one highway bridge thingy. Just wait and see, folks. And then we got Valcine. We got Valcine when she said, but Lynn stated yesterday on Cool Critics Show that the uplift in wages was only for certain ones, federal. That's Lynn Tolliver.
Huh. Oh, and I think they were talking about when the president said the president can only control, you know, the federal government. So he can't, you know, that's the reason why he's having a summit to invite business leaders to come to the White House and ask them, you know, will they follow his lead? So I think that's what he's referring to there. All right, coming up next, folks, we're going to take a timeout. Some more smooth jazz on the way. And then after that, it's on a need-to-know basis with our main, Jerome Esprit. Don't go nowhere. We'll be right back.
Economy grew at 3.2% annual rate from October to December. So the fourth quarter was the strongest consumer spending in 3 years, which is an encouraging sign for this year. And just a quick highlight for those who may have missed the State of the Union. The executive orders that the president was talking about was the $10.10 minimum wage for federal contract workers, a new starter retirement savings account, in an effort to bring U.S. jobs back from overseas. He also wanted a government review of training programs and mobilized businesses, community colleges to create apprenticeship and education contact. He wanted to connect 99% of all school children for next generation broadband in the next 5 years, and he already put ahead $100 million to redesign high schools. So just as a quick summary of the State of the Union, those were the executive orders. It was nothing that was going to change the way of life, so stop listening to that bull. All right. So here, do you remember, I missed this last week, but the first lady had a birthday party. Did you hear about that? The celebration.
No, I didn't hear
Beyonce.
About it.
Oh, Beyonce performed Single Ladies and To the Left and Stevie Wonder, you know, Science Still Deliver. No, they had a bunch of stars there. Now, I'm saying this because on the invitation, there was a little controversy because the invitations went out a month before, and it said, eat before you come, right? And so party planners and event planners, now, okay, we black now, so here's the thing. the first lady wanted to party. We understand what they meant by that. So you know the bougie people kept saying, you don't throw a party and tell people to eat before they come? Yeah, you do. When you going to dance. But the Chicago Tribune did report that it was a buffet offered of finger foods, mini sliders, a beef brisket, plenty of dessert, open bar with hard liquor, champagne, beer, and wine. And people complained that they couldn't sit down and eat. They partied at the White House, apparently. It was her birthday. And also, the first lady said that she wanted to be like Cicely Tyson when she goes up in her People magazine interview. She said she went to see Cicely Tyson on Broadway. She's in her 80s, did a two-hour play with stamina and passion, so she told her she wanted to be like her when she grew up. I just wanted to do that story to say, I love the way that they respect the people who came before them. Cicely Tyson still put in...
Absolutely. I agree with you on that. 110% on that.
Yeah. And so people think that they keep ignoring the other things that's going on in the country, but they're still giving ups and props to their folks, so give it up. Now, an inventor has created the world's first light bulb that won't turn off during a power outage, so it looks similar to a regular... Yeah, it looks similar to a normal light bulb and can be screwed into everyday sockets. So when it goes out, there's a rechargeable battery in it. So you can go around and turn on your light switches because they're being charged all day. So,
wow.
Hey, yep, if you want to pre-order them, they're $35 at smartchargelight.com if you want to get one of
those. How long do they last?
That's good. They estimate that they last, oh, gosh, I forgot. They said, well, it's longer than normal light bulb because it's running. It has a smart board in it. So while it's not being used, it's just being charged. So it lasts for about 4 hours. It lasts for about 4 hours. The actual bulb.
4 hours?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm saying initially. Because you got to remember, if your lights go off in your house and you don't have the light bulb anyway, by the time you turn it on, you're talking about a constant use of about 4 hours.
Oh, okay.
So people don't use it.
Yeah, so you won't use it for an everyday basis. You just have it plugged up just in case of emergency.
No. It's actually plugged in because the way the circuit board works is that when the power is flowing, it's only charging the rechargeable battery. It's not, you know, you're using the electricity, not the battery. But if the power goes out, then there's a battery that kicks in that has about four hours of life.
So you can keep your lights turned off. Oh, okay, I got you. I'm sorry for making this longer than what it's supposed to be. Okay, sorry.
No, you could. I think the listeners may have questions, so that's cool. I can explain it that way.
Okay, so
parents are being warned about the craze. I don't know if I talked about this. Middle school kids are crushing up those Smarties candies, and they're snorting, they're smoking them. Now, parents in Rhode Island, they're warning their children that they could succumb to, like, horrifying infestations of nasal maggots and worming in their nose because, you know, they get internal bleeding and lung infections. So there's some new craze of people sniffing candy. We got a bad drug culture if that starts happening. All right.
Gee.
I know. Now, in New Mexico, a driver was forced to have a series of enemas and anal probes in a failed attempt by police to find drugs. Now, he was awarded $1.6 million in a court settlement because the police said during a traffic stop, he looked like he was clenching his butt when he got out of the car. So they did all of these body cavity searches and x-rays, colonoscopy, and they found no drugs. They're going to have to pay me more than $1.6 million. And
you ain't lying.
I'm going out on that one. If I wasn't going to jail for nothing else, somebody's going down. All right. Okay, so really quick, I know we talked about this as far as banks and people who caused the financial crisis not getting sued, but in court this week, the FDIC sued 11 directors and officers of the failed First Regional Bank for $72.5 million. They stole something like $522 million that they cost the deposit insurance fund by violating their policies, and so they're only getting $73 million back. See, white-collar crime does pay. $500 million, and they only have to pay, and they only have to pay back $73? Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, you know, here's another one. As promised, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio did announce that they are not going to try to repeal the judge's decision on stop and frisk. So they're not going to fight it, and they're going to pay the settlement for the people who they hurt during stop and frisk. So that was also announced because they dropped their court case. And so I wanted to make sure I said that one. And just in case you didn't know, men's immune systems, according to a new study, are not as effective as fighting off viruses as women. And that's Stanford University researchers said that the research has showed, research has established that men have weaker immune system responses to influenza than women because of testosterone has dampened the effect on their bodies to fight the virus. So they're just saying that since men are hunter-gatherers, we historically suffer more injuries, catch more diseases from fighting and hunting. So the male's immune system was caused into action more often. So there's a study out. Women does have better immune system. So next time your man says he's sick, don't go, you need to suck it up. Because technically, we put in work. All right. There you have it. That's a week of news that you may have missed. Look it up.
Oh, man. I love it. I love it. I love it. On a need to know basis with our main man, Jerome Esprit, the smartest man in the world. All right,
there
folks. And I love it, the fact that we get done a little early so I can get to my Super Bowl extravaganza. All right, folks, listen, we have a news update real quick, then we'll be back with our final thoughts. Don't go anywhere, folks. The Serious Side is winding down. We'll be right back after this.
Our news in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. Polling stations have closed in Thailand after a day of voting that many feared would turn violent. It didn't, but as Michael Sullivan reports from Bangkok, today's election will do little to resolve the country's deep political divisions.
The Thai Election Commission reports that 89% of polling stations nationwide suffered no disruptions today, and there was almost no violence here in the capital, Bangkok, which many had anticipated following yesterday's gunfight between anti-government protesters and government supporters that left 7 wounded. Voting was disrupted in several districts here in Bangkok, though, when protesters prevented voters from casting ballots while the police and army stood by and did nothing. Election results won't be known for some time. Another round must be scheduled for those denied access to polling stations, and elections must be held in 28 constituencies where protesters blocked candidate registration. And protest leaders say they've no plans to stop. For NPR News, I'm Michael Sullivan in Bangkok.
The website of Ukraine's president says he's planning to return to work tomorrow from a short sick leave. President Viktor Yanukovych had been on leave for a respiratory illness since Thursday, but it sparked fears he may have been preparing to declare a state of emergency. Over the past couple of months, he's faced opposition protests with thousands gathering in Kiev today. New Orleans Mayor Mitch Landrieu has been reelected. Eileen Fleming of member station WWNO reports an early commanding lead never faltered.
About an hour after polls closed, Mayor Landrieu began his acceptance speech to hundreds of supporters. He acknowledged his two fellow Democratic opponents, and he gave a nod to their criticism that the city's recovery from Hurricane Katrina has not reached the entire community.
We see big challenges all around us. We have crime, we have unemployment, families and communities that face deep struggles. But we cannot lose heart, and we cannot leave anybody behind.
Landrieu is limited to 2 terms. When this second one expires, New Orleans will be marking its 300th anniversary. For NPR News, I'm Eileen Fleming in New Orleans.
Tens of thousands of football fans from around the world are set to pack into New Jersey's MetLife Stadium for today's Super Bowl between the Denver Broncos and the Seattle Seahawks. It's a matchup that pits the Broncos' top-rated offense against the Seahawks' top defense. Broncos quarterback Peyton Manning acknowledged the Seahawks' defensive capabilities when he complimented Seattle cornerback Richard Sherman at a news conference.
There's a lot of players that might be smart, not be talented, that are talented, maybe not quite as experienced and as intelligent. He's both. And That's what makes him such a such an excellent cover corner.
Manning himself has been named as the NFL's most valuable player for the fifth time. No other player has won more than three MVP awards. You're listening to NPR News.
Folks, another showdown, and we appreciate you guys hanging out with us as always. We really do appreciate it. Let me say some final good mornings to some people. I want to say hello to Rosemary. Good morning. How are you? From Panama. Love to get people that's abroad listening to this mess that we call the United States of America. Also want to say what's up to Shirley. Shirley, good morning to you. And also good morning to Todd. Todd from Michigan, Lansing, Michigan. All right, it's time for our final thoughts. Ladies are first. Dr. Princess, I'll do your final thoughts.
Well, first of all, great, great, great show today. And I want to just leave everyone with this. As we talked about homelessness today and many other things, it all boils down to there is a need for personal development. There is a need for transformation in all of our individual lives. Many of us are striving and with the goal to get to that highest place in our life. I describe it often as true purpose. That place of total fulfillment and happiness, even if one doesn't even know what happiness is. But if you do not make giving your main ingredient, you will only make it so far. So yes, make it happen. That's the thing. You've got to make it happen for yourself. You've got to give. But if giving is not your main ingredient, you will only make it so far. Don't forget to give to others, whether it's a kind word, kind act. A lot can go, it can go a long way. Even for someone who's homeless, you say you don't have money to give because you've got to feed your own self. Well, guess what? When you give even a kind word, sometimes that's what that one person needed, just to lift them up, to give them the strength to move and keep going so that they can go on to the next level. So give however you can. And trust me, it will be given back to you. You'll find that you'll make it a lot further by doing that. So I just want to say thank you for today. It was great. Don't forget to visit TransformingDetroitTV.com. Also, visit us online at BountifulGroup.com. And don't forget on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, just Google Princess Adelia. And also visit me and connect with me there. I love every last one of you.
You tried to take all that time, didn't you? Thank you very much, Dr. Princess Adelia. My goodness. Eazy-E, final thoughts.
Well, Jay, it was a great show today. I think it was an exceptional show today. And, you know, I think that maybe we all learned something today. I know I have. I think, you know, this week I'm going to go out and try to do something for somebody else less fortunate than I am. And I think maybe everybody listening to the show ought to maybe go out and do that one thing for somebody that we don't know this week, and let's all help somebody and maybe talk about it next week.
You know, that's a great idea. You know, that's a homework assignment. Good job, Eazy, man. You know, we appreciate you, man, because you're here every Sunday come hell or high water. And there are times where you and I have communicated on a one-on-one basis, and you tell me how great the show is. And, you know, you're the inspiration that keeps it moving, man. So I appreciate you, man. I really mean that.
Thank you.
All right. Jerome Esprit, man, final thoughts.
Okay. Well, I have two quick ones, but one I want you to comment on because I forgot to put the story in the need to know. But a Japanese lingerie company came out with a concept bra, which is able to sense when a woman's in love, so the heart monitor will actually undo the bra if the woman feels like she cares about the guy or something.
What?
It has to be.
Oh, we need that in the United States of America.
It has a smartphone app. Can you imagine somebody hacking around just to see who got one of those bras on? That's going to be crazy.
I can't wait till Wednesday. I'm going to have some fun with that one.
Oh, God. All right, my bad. I didn't mean to break it down, but still.
You brought it up, actually. Sorry about that. Yes, Jerome.
Yeah, I did bring it up. All right, so
Sirius Radio has announced via a press release that Spike Lee will be hosting two different shows. One's on the NBA channel 217. Spike Lee's Best Seat in the House on Thursday nights, 7 to 8. And another thing I want to talk about is Arsenio Hall. If you did not see the Arsenio Hall show on Martin Luther King's birthday, it is one of the blackest, best shows that I have seen for late night. The Alpha Step, Maya Angelou was on there, Smokey Robinson. They did a great job of honoring Dr. Martin Luther King. You have to go check it out on YouTube if you didn't see it. I actually saw the show, and I keep forgetting to mention it. So I wanted to make sure that everybody gets a chance to check that out.
All right, man, I'm going to definitely check that out.
Yeah,
check it
out. And one more thing.
We'll see how smart he is on the Super Bowl pick.
Hey, I'm a Syracuse University alumni, so since we beat Duke and we're number one, I want to give a shout-out to my people. And Vanessa Williams did sing the national anthem, so I think that's why they won. That's it.
All right, man. The man gets the first and last word. Mr. Elias, man, final thoughts.
Man, my final thoughts are this, man. Look. There's poverty in this country. You know, it's never going to end. We're never going to end poverty. But, hell, it doesn't have to be in such large numbers. You know, let's do something like Easy said for somebody this week. I mean, it might not help the poverty level, but it make that person feel better about themselves. And, look, politicians, if you get off your lazy ass and create jobs, there are a lot of people out there that want to go to work. And people quit being so damn greedy because the greed is killing us. It's killing each and every one of us. You know, how much money do you people need to say that I'm a billionaire? You're a billionaire sometimes 39, 40 times over. So stop with the greed. Give back a little bit. Reach back and help somebody besides your damn selves.
You know, those damn freaking Republicans. Those damn Republicans. They want to cut school lunches. They want to do all these things. They want to cut programs that's going to hurt the people who really need it the most. But yet still, we still subsidize and give money to these big oil corporations, folks, who makes billions of dollars. And we're giving them money to offset expenses? Are you kidding me? What country do we live in? It is sad. It's a sad state of affairs when you kind of go back and look at where we spend our money and where we're trying to take our money. You know what I tell you? What, we the people, something else. It's a strong statement. Folks, step up to the plate. Put people in office who are going to do something about it. Stop sitting here voting for people because of the fact that they may be saying something that you like in a soundbite. You know, the Republican response, she talked about all the things that the Republicans wanted to do, but she didn't lay out one fact. She didn't talk about one plan. Enough is enough. I'm tired of hearing this nonsense. Do your homework. Do your research. People talking about President Obama's taking guns. He hasn't taken guns yet. Matter of fact, he signed a law to let you carry them in national parks. Figure out what the hell you're talking about before you start making all this nonsense and putting out there what I call white noise. And on that note, Mr. Elias, it's Super Sunday, my brother. If we're talking serious stuff, what time is it?
It's time for the super serious side of the J. Brown Show.
Oh, I like the way you did that. That was nice. I like the way you did that. All right, so for Jerome Esprit, Easy, Caliwood, Dr. Prince is on D, and of course, my main man, Miss Elias. God bless you all. Enjoy the big game. We're getting out of here 5 minutes early. And if it is Sunday, we're talking serious stuff. It is the serious side. God bless everybody.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network. Network.
FM is KJM Jams, and welcome to Sunday Morning Live, music of love and inspiration, which happens every Sunday here on BTR Radio. We want you guys to sit back and relax and enjoy 30 minutes of commercial-free music, which starts right now. Keep it locked. Thank you.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.